Welcome to the Independent Schools Show podcast series. Please enjoy and head to schoolsshow.co.uk for more information.
Great. Well, welcome to this afternoon's sessions. I'm Ed Vasey. I used to be a Member of Parliament. I'm now in the House of Lords. I also have two kids in private education, so I've been through the hell that you lot in the audience are about to go through, but I'm not giving you the benefit of my wisdom. Two of my guests are two very intimidating guests who not only are extremely smartly dressed, but are also fantastic sportsmen, as well as the heads of two highly successful schools. We've had a session already contrasting single-sex education in London and in the country, and now we're going to contrast co-ed education in London and in the country. So I'm delighted to welcome David Goodhue, the head of Latimer Upper School, and Jesse L. Zinger, whose surname cries out for a few zinging puns, headmaster of Sevenoaks School. And I'm going to start with just open questions. So, David, I'm going to give you the floor just to talk a bit about Latimer Upper. You're in London, where your pupils come from, your diversity, your academic profile, the outcomes, how co-education works, that kind of thing at Latimer.
Absolutely. Well, look, thanks very much. Latimer Upper is a co-ed day school. It's in West London, in Hammersmith, on the River Thames, which is why rowing is such a forte. We've got about 1,400 pupils, 7 to 18, slightly more girls than boys. So we're roughly 50-50 co-ed, but at the minute, slightly more girls than boys. 50% of my staff are women, 50% of my senior management team are women. One in five pupils in the school is there on a bursary, means-tested bursary. The majority of those are free places, and we're aiming for one in four by 2024. And I think, you know, as a school, we reflect sort of cosmopolitan West London, really. 90% of our pupils come from within a three-mile radius of the school, and we reflect West London. So we've got lots of families from France, Italy, the US, elsewhere. And we like to think of ourselves as feeling a bit like London. So buzzy, dynamic, diverse, and with those juxtapositions that you get in London.
And for those of you who know about the debacle of Hammersmith Bridge, I think it's safe to say you're probably on the right side of Hammersmith Bridge for most of your parents.
Well, wasn't me. It's nothing to do with me. And very best of luck to the schools on that side of the river and the parents who choose to send their children there. Good for them.
Jesse. Tell us about Sevenoaks. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Sevenoaks School is a day and boarding school in the town of Sevenoaks in Kent. We have 800 day students and 400 boarders, and we are completely co-ed throughout. And we have three entry points. So we have a number of day students who come to us at year seven at 11 plus, and then we have an entry point at 13 plus, which is when our boarding begins. And then again, we have students who join us for the sixth form. And we're... I think we're quite, for a school that's outside of the M25, outside of London, we're uniquely diverse and cosmopolitan. And I think that's partly because we do the IB diploma in the sixth form. We don't do A-levels, so we just do the IB. And we've done that very successfully now for over 40 years. So we've attracted families from around the world. And so at the moment this year, we have students from 46 different countries. And that's some of those are in the boarding community, but many of those are in the day community. As David just said, again, we benefit from being very close to London. We're 25 minutes to London Bridge by train, so we have a very diverse community in Sevenoaks as well.
So do you have kids coming from London then?
We do, yes. A number of students who come from London every day. Now, I would not advocate that any parent travels a long way to their son or daughter's school. I think it's what David just said is lovely, that 90% of their students come from 3 miles. Some of our students come from farther away, but that's because we do have strong train links. But I think we do have a number of students who are quite local as well.
So I'm not setting you up against each other, but we'll talk a bit about country versus London in a minute. But one thing you're both united on is you're both co-ed. And I know a few single-sex schools are thinking potentially about going co-ed in the sixth form, for example. Can you talk, both of you, obviously, we'll start with you, Jesse, on... You know, what is it? What should a parent be thinking when they're thinking, should I go single-sex or co-ed? I mean, just to let you into a little window in my life, you know, my daughter wanted to go co-ed, but she herself changed her mind, kind of aged 11, and decided to go single-sex. It felt like it was kind of her personal choice. What's your experience in how parents and indeed their children kind of approach that issue?
Well, one of the great things about schools in the UK and London in the southeast is there are a number of great co-ed schools and a number of great single-sex schools. So if young people or their parents are really keen on one or the other, then they do have options. I'm particularly proud at Sevenoaks that we're a flourishing co-ed school, and I think that's very much part of our ethos. We've, unlike a lot of old schools in the country, we've been co-ed for a long time. So we've been co-ed for over 40 years, and we're fully co-educational throughout, even boys and girls in every year group and in our day and boarding community. And I'm quite a big supporter of co-education myself, and I'll let the single-sex people argue for single-sex, but I think single-sex is a bit of an anachronism in today's world. I'd be so bold as to say that.
We want bold.
The universities are single-sex, and even some of the traditional single-sex colleges are phasing that out. My college at Oxford went co-ed back in 1986. And of course, the real world, the working world, is co-educational these days. And I've taught in single-sex schools in my career, and I've found that at the single-sex boys' schools where I taught, they didn't often have as a respectful appreciation of just how bright and capable the young women were their age. And in the co-educational environment, that doesn't happen. They fully appreciate the boys and girls growing up together.
So, David, let me be sort of bold, or to put it another way, deeply cliched and lazy in order to tease out answers from you as well, which is, if you're a parent, you're thinking, girls are brighter than boys, age 13, 14, they're working harder. They don't want to be distracted by pimply adolescent boys. And you might be thinking, boys, they're never going to be able to compete with these girls at this age. It'll destroy their self-confidence. Much safer at a single-sex school. What would you say to a parent who comes in with that terrible attitude?
Well, I'm pleased you characterised it that way. And as many of my best friends run girls' schools, I know they would also not characterise their schools that way. I think the thing is, you've got to get this the right way round. And I think there are some unhelpful myths yes. that sort of stick in people's mind. And some of those myths, funnily enough, are about London as a city, and some of them are about single-sex. And you need to take those away in so that you can make a properly informed decision. And, you know, some of those myths are about the way girls and boys are together in the classroom. And by the way, you know, I drop in on lessons every day. And let me tell you, it will be a brave Latimer boy who tried to take airtime away from a girl. And, you know, when I show parents round, in their mind, I think they have a stereotype
yes.
of a science lesson. Girls at the back, terrified to put their hands up. Naughty boys dominating the teacher's attention. And that could not be further from the truth. But the flip side of that, and this is to your point about intellectual ability, by the way, there's no peer-reviewed research that shows that once you control for school type, girls do better in girls' schools. Once you control for school type. There's some mischievous research that compares academically selective, independent, and faith girls' schools with all schools, including co-ed schools. Once you control for school type. So my example would be maths. And two of the best mathematicians we've ever had through the school, arch rivals, Holmes and Moriarty, all the way through their school life, pushed each other to excel. Both went on to silver medals in the Olympiad, were a boy and a girl. Why would you take 50% of the best mathematicians and take them out of that class and deny your daughter the chance to be challenged that way? Why would you take 50% of the best mathematicians out of that class and deny your boy the chance to be challenged that way? So actually, I think there are some unhelpful myths about academic outcomes, about behaviour, and they don't stack up to reality. And, you know, when you come and see the reality, and Jesse knows this, in the classroom, those myths are outdated. That's not how schools work. And I also think you do your son or your daughter a disservice if you try and wrap them in cotton wool
yeah.
and protect them from the real world, of, as Jesse said, of university and real life.
I mean, I'm obviously putting forward slight caricatures in order, because I do believe, you know, a lot of parents do approach schools with certain myths and preformed opinions to a certain extent, so it's important to address them. I mean, just out of interest, what would you estimate, it's a slightly unfair question, in terms of the parents who come to your schools having a sort of, having made a pre-decision, I definitely want my kid to go co-ed, how many are looking at both and genuinely open-minded? That I want the best school, I'm not really fussed if it's single sex or co-ed?
Well, I think that's really hard to say. I think you're right. A lot of people.
That's why I thought said it was a lot question.
A lot of people want the best school for their son or daughter.
Exactly.
I think there are. I know there are some families at my school where they might send their daughter to us, but then their boy to another school in Kent, like Tunbridge, or. Mm-hmm. But they also might send their son to us and their daughter to an all-girls school. So different families might want different things for their child. And I think that's one of the nice things about, again, about the independent sector in the UK and in the Southeast in particular, is there is a real range of choice. So families can try to find the school that's right for them.
And I think that's key. Choice is key. Yeah. Choice and fit. Because actually, I think the gender thing is complete red herring. Schools are excellent not because of the gender of their pupils. They're excellent because of the incredible heads they have. Of the wonderful pupils they attract, the pastoral care, the teaching and learning, all of those things, the sporting opportunities, the music, the drama, the art, all of those things make a school excellent, not the gender of its pupils. Mm. And if you look at the schools in London or outside of London, they're excellent for so many reasons that are not to do with the gender of their pupils. So it's a complete red herring, and I think choice is key.
Yeah.
Good, well, I'm glad I asked those ridiculous questions because I do think a lot of parents, and I would potentially include myself, do, you know, when they're weighing up schools, you know, co-ed or single sex is a factor. And I think the message you're getting across is look at the excellence of the school first and indeed the fit and approach with an open mind. But now I'm on a roll with cliches and unfair prejudices. Let's talk about country and town. And again, certainly don't want to set you two against each other, nor do you want to be set against each other. But clearly, again, parents do think there's a London school thing and there's a country school thing, and the London school thing might be I want to see my kids for a start, obviously, at home. They might become more streetwise and so on, and the boarding school has a sort of image of a slightly pastoral ideal and whole mm-hmm. care, and I have made terrible points about TikTok and how, with hindsight, perhaps I should have sent my children to boarding school. It's the only way to get rid of their mobile phone. How do you characterise the sort of London experience at a co-ed school in terms of what parents should be thinking about?
So, I think you're right about generalising, and there's a great saying about, you know, he who generalises generally lies, so we've got to be a bit careful there. But, I mean, you know, having worked in boarding schools outside of London and in London and in day schools outside of London, I think there is, you know, there are some differences, but some of them aren't the differences you think. And again, excellent. I come back to unhelpful myths and things that people have in their mind because, let's be honest, in particular the media, know that your brain is wired to pay attention to danger, and therefore anything that involves danger to your children is going to lead as headlines.
Catnip.
And so there are some really unhelpful sort of myths about the comparative safety. And, you know, both our schools, you know, take safeguarding very seriously. You mentioned social media. One of the big issues for our time, I think, is that because of the internet, everybody goes to school together. Yes. And whether you go to a girls' boarding school in the countryside or a co-ed day school in London, you all go to school together because of the internet. And that's a sort of an issue for all of our schools, I think. But in terms of what makes London feel different, I think it comes back to those juxtapositions that you get. London is a real sort of cheek by jowl city. There's a real diversity, there's a buzz, and you've got access to incredible resources on your doorstep. If I think about our drama students, you know, they're going to the theatre once a week to the best plays available in London. Our musicians, the same. Our artists have access to all of those exhibitions. And, you know, London, I think, is really hard to compete with as one of the top cities in the world. Interestingly, The Economist ranked it as the 14th safest city in the world, including for health security and personal security. So I think if you've got that on your doorstep, you've got those incredible opportunities to tube right away. And I think there's an opportunity, and this speaks to something that is really important for us as a school about being grounded. It's that idea of feeling like real life, you know, and going to school on the tube. You know, going to school on the tube, being there with people from all walks of life in a buzzy, dynamic atmosphere is very different from, you know, getting on to a coach and going off to a school in the countryside for the week and coming back. And that's very different. Now, I'm not saying one is better than the other, and I think this is really, really key. Mm. They're different, and I think it's about fit and what's right for you know, your son or daughter, but also what feels right for you as a family. And so, you know, I say, I've worked in boarding schools in the countryside, and there are some people, absolutely the best decision. They flew there. They were so happy. And I think, again, you know, working out, you know, where is my son or daughter going to be happiest? Because where your child is happiest, they'll fly highest. And so it's not about better. It's about different, and it's about fit.
But do you think, again, another unfair question, do you think the choice of the parents who are coming to you, are the majority making choices between London day schools, or are they making choices between London day schools and boarding schools?
So, I mean, in terms of our own surveys of joiners and non-joiners, by and large, the people who are choosing between us are choosing between us and other London day schools. There might be one other school in the mix, but otherwise, by and large, not. Whether that's going to change as a result of the last 18 months, you know, who can see? I mean, I don't know what you see.
Well, Jesse, talk to us about the... I've asked David the question about, you know, what you would say about the boarding school experience, and I won't re-trot out my terrible cliches that I trotted out for David.
I did find it slightly amusing, the title of this talk, Town versus Country, and if I can gently point out that Hammersmith is in a city and Sevenoaks is a town, so it really is city versus town. Yeah. But I'm happy to play the role and support schools outside of London or countryside schools. I think I love London, and I agree with everything that David said. It's a buzzy place, and if I lived in Chiswick or Hammersmith or even Barnes, I'd be delighted to send my daughters to school with David. He's a fab head, and I think you get a sense of that listening to him just this evening. What we benefit from in Sevenoaks is a lovely market town that is a great community with a number of independent shops. Even lunchtime today, I was with the mayor of Sevenoaks as the new fishmonger was opening, which is another independent shop amongst nice places like Waitrose and M&S, and it's a wonderful experience for our boarders who can walk into a town and go shopping in the evening. Or if I go out to dinner in Sevenoaks with my wife, I'll often bump into a table of boarders who are out to dinner on a Saturday night too. So there's a lovely feel to that. And of course, Sevenoaks exists because it's a commuter town, because of the great trains to London. And so we can still benefit coming up and going to shows, but then we come back and we have all the space. And that's what I think, that's what you get, obviously, and it's the same with a school as it is for a property. You just get more space outside of London. So we have, our campus is over 100 acres, extensive playing fields, athletics track, tennis courts, and we're really fortunate. Our campus is adjacent to Knoll Park, which is 1,000-acre deer park with one of the most beautiful National Trust houses in England in the center of it. And that we have our own gates from the school. You can just go in and walk into the park. Particularly good for our cross-country team, which I occasionally run with. So we just have that a little bit more space. And it's and also in boarding school life, it's a little bit different of a pace. London, and I've taught at London schools, it's a busy, intense day. And I remember staff grabbing a baguette on their way to a club or society at lunchtime. And I think we do quite a few things after school in the evenings. We have Saturday school, like many boarding schools do, so that we can do everything that a London day school does packed in a day. We can spread that out over a bit more time. And that's just a little difference between a day in boarding and being outside of London.
And, I mean, I made this point to another boarding school head we talked to earlier in the day. I mean, another myth about the boarding school, I guess, is that, you know, you drop your kid off at the beginning of term and you don't see them till the end of term. Yeah. That's all changing now.
That is changing. Now, there are a handful of boarding schools left in the country that are very strict and only don't do kind of weekly boarding or flexi boarding. But even at Sevenoaks, even though we have school 6 days a week, once the students are finished with their co-curricular activity on Saturday, they're always welcome to go home for the weekend.
Oh, right.
And we're flexible in that sense. And so the students can go home on Saturday night and see their friends or family. And I think what's nice, too, about our mix of day and boarding and the international and day students we have is, at its best, it means our international students get invited over to a local day student's house for a Sunday roast. And then at the holidays, our international students are inviting the local day students back to come and say, you know, come and celebrate Chinese New Year overseas, or come watch a cricket match in India, or come and visit me in East Africa. And there are wonderful anecdotes of those friendships and the international element that we have at our school.
Yeah, that is interesting, the international element. Do some parents see it as a plus and a minus? Because there's the plus of meeting kids from all over the world. You've got a global village.
Yeah.
But there's also the minus, as it were, that when you're sort of in your early 20s, your friendship group is now scattered across the globe. Is that something parents think about?
I haven't had any parents say to me that it's a negative. I think in today's world, especially in London and the Southeast here, it's so multicultural and diverse that people appreciate that global perspective. And as I said, our day students, you know, they might have the opportunity to travel to meet international friends, but they also benefit from that wisdom and insight in lessons. So yeah, exactly, when you're in geography or economics or and debating a topic, I think one of the things I'll remember the most of my first year at Sevenoaks was the U.S. election versus Trump and Biden in November, and the most exciting place in the school was my sixth form common room. And as they were counting those votes, I was in there, and the students just up to date with the latest information coming out of different news outlets and Twitter, and it was buzzing, exciting, and dynamic. And I think in the level of interest in, and you know, we're an old English school, we're 600 years old, and I often correct parents and staff, say we're not an international school, we're an old English school, we just have a very unique global perspective, again, partly from the IB and partly how we attract students around the world to study that.
So one of the things I've been sort of saying in these discussions is, and in a non-pejorative way, is that the school chooses the pupil. Your child tends to get a place at the school that actually turns out to be right for them, and they won't get a place at a school not because they're too stupid, but just because the school isn't the right fit for them. So what would you say, David, is the kind of pupil you're looking at, who you kind of know instinctively? I mean, they go through tests and they do have to be academically rigorous and so on, but you kind of know instinctively it's going to be a Latimer pupil.
Well, that's tricky because, I mean, there isn't a type and we don't have a template for the pupils we're looking for. I think the only common criterion that all of them have is that they're ferociously bright because it's highly academically selective. But otherwise, we're a school that believes in individuals and is large enough for those opportunities to exist. So we've got people in the school who are effortlessly outgoing. We've got people who are, you know, all-rounders and really sporty, musical, dramatic. And we've got people who are quite shy and reserved and you know, are great stalwarts of sort of board games club or whatever it might be. So it's a pretty broad church and there isn't a type. I think what we want to do is get people who are bright, curious, but who are prepared to be themselves and respect other people's right to be themselves. And if they can get that right, we think they've got the potential to be outstanding Latimerians. Otherwise, we're great believers in individuality. And one of the things that we sometimes rail against is there's a very unhelpful label, which I think a rival organization to today may have coined about needing to be cool and us being a cool school. And you know, I would point out that my two passions in life are classical music and ancient Greek. You know, I couldn't be less cool. And there are plenty of people in the school who are as geeky as I am. So I think the key thing is we're a broad church, we're big enough for individuality, and it's about, yes, people are pretty bright, they're curious, but otherwise it's about individuality, being yourself, respecting other people's right to be themselves. We'll take it from there.
David is not telling the truth, because in the green room, Jesse was starstruck to meet David, who you've admired as a head. Before you became
Well, I've had the privilege of meeting David on several occasions, but he is a head that I admired before I was even a head, so it is a privilege to be on stage with him.
I don't want to take away from your light, though. So tell us, do you feel when you meet parents or you meet their children, much more importantly, that you kind of know instinctively, yes, this child will thrive at Sevenoaks, and what are those kind of characteristics?
No, I think I would echo actually what David said, and I think our schools actually have a lot in common in the sense we're not quite as big as Latimer Upper, but we're 1,200 students, and again the same thing, we've got students who love doing chess in the climbing wall, and then we also have students who might enjoy the coding club, and we also have students who play rugby who have no interest in doing coding. You know, one of the things I'm proud of at Sevenoaks is the range of co-curricular opportunities we have. And again, that's one of the great things about the independent sector in the UK and generally, the opportunities in sport and music and drama and art. And then also those niche clubs that you find, because for some students it might be debating or Model United Nations or being involved in the CCF. And I think having lots of different opportunities. The thing I'm most passionate about, probably one of the things I'm most passionate about as head, and I say this to prospective students and to our current students and parents, is I want the students to appreciate what they have and I want them to make the most of it. I think it's a tremendous privilege for a student to go to a school like ours. it's a tremendous privilege for parents to be able to send their children to schools like ours, and it's a great privilege to work at them. And what I don't like is, what I'm really looking for a student is someone who's going to come and make the most of every day and seize those opportunities and also contribute to it and make the school an even richer place.
Yeah, which is a real battle. I think going to schools like yours, one always feels that the kids, you know, they should listen to you don't know what you've got till it's gone, because they have no idea how lucky they're. Those 5 or 6 years when you're not having to worry too much and you can just absorb this knowledge, have these amazing opportunities.
But I think there is also, that is an important part of education. And, you know, to paraphrase Spider-Man, you know, with great privilege comes great responsibility. And, you know, Sevenoaks Partnership and Outreach Program is incredible. And the stuff they do is phenomenal. Nearly as good as ours, and you know, equally, you know, what we do with InReach and bursaries is really, really important. And I think actually, independent schools that don't teach their children social responsibility are doing, and you know, an awareness of the world outside the privileged gates of their community are doing them a disservice, because how are those people going to thrive in a diverse global economy where they're going to be mixing with people from all backgrounds and all walks of life? So actually, I think, you know, it's a point well made, but if schools aren't doing, you know, the stuff that we've talked about, then actually I think they're selling their kids short, because they're growing up in a monoculture, and we know what happens when you leave a monoculture.
Yeah. And it was actually John F. Kennedy that said, with great privilege comes responsibility. Yeah. So I think Spider-Man was power. So you can actually quote JFK. But he made that point at a graduation ceremony at an American university. But it was exactly that. And that is a great aspect of independent schools today, is that there is a lot of work going on with service and partnership and actually getting. So it's in our timetable on Thursday afternoons, all of our students are involved in work in the local community and trying to appreciate what they have. And it's not. We've actually dropped the term outreach, because it's about service and partnership work, and we learn a lot from the other schools and charities and care homes that we work with.
And I think that's a really key point, because it's got to be mutually beneficial. If it's patronage, it's patronizing. Yep. You know, it's part of an education. You know, our children learn so many important life lessons from going out and doing this stuff, and that's part of growing up and part of what a good education is. So yeah, I agree with you.
What I've loved about these sessions is the great passion that shines through from the school leaders I've been lucky enough to interview. I wanted to just check if anyone in the audience had a burning question. We would be delighted if you did. I have one question I want to ask, but I also wanted to remind the audience that this is literally the 45 minutes of the happiest 45 minutes of your life, because not only do we have half an hour talking about schools, in about a minute we're going to have 15 minutes talking about house prices. So it is literally a sort of perfect session. But if you did have a question, please feel to ask it. But the other point I make is, when we say goodbye to our two wonderful guests, don't leave, because you're going to get 15 minutes talking about house prices, which is going to be absolutely fascinating. On the basis that we've covered all the ground, I just want to ask, it's a semi-repeated question. Probably may think you've asked it already. I want to ask each of you, what is the myth that irritates you the most about what people might think about your school? Is there a kind of, I've trotted out lots of cliches about what people come to when they come to a school like, when they consider a school like Sevenoaks or a school like that. Is there one myth that you would just want to get rid of and say, if you think this about this school, you're completely wrong?
Absolutely. For me, it's in Sevenoaks, a town that where I live and I've made my life and I'm raising my daughter, is a town that I love. It's being told that Sevenoaks is the posh school at the top of the high street. We're called Sevenoaks School because we were founded by an orphan in the 14th century, William Sevenoak. And the reason his surname was Sevenoak was he was literally found as an abandoned baby on the streets of Sevenoaks, raised by a councilman. He went on to become Lord Mayor of London, MP for London, had a very illustrious career. And he experienced social mobility like few others have. And he set up a school in the town of Sevenoaks when there was no state education in 1432, and he set up almshouses. And so we are very much a charitable foundation. And the almshouses he set up are still at the very front of our school and part of our school foundation. And we still have dozens of students every year coming to us on means tests and bursaries. And we are very much a school for the community. We're the center for partnerships for 29 local primary schools. We sponsor an academy. We're an outright sponsor of an academy in Seven Oaks called Knoll Academy, where I'm actually a governor. And I think we're so ingrained in the community, and we do so much for the community. And even this week, a local primary school head wrote to me and said, everything's been canceled with the latest restrictions. We can't hold our sports day. Can we use your playing fields? I said, of course you can. And I facilitated it, and we've resolved the issues about lose. We just make things happen. And I want to be known as a school that's embedded in the community, part of the community, and is a charitable place. And anybody who earns a place can come there regardless of their family's ability to pay, which has always been our foundation. And I'm part of the reason I've admired David as a head is all the fantastic work he's done in raising money for bursaries and widening access.
Brilliant one. David. That is a wonderful story, by the way. I didn't realise the rich history of Seven Oaks.
Actually, my predecessor taught at Seven Oaks, as did, I think, one of our governors as well. But, no, absolutely. I think I would do something on behalf of co-ed schools, in general, which affects me, but also all of us, really, which is, it's back to the point I made, schools are brilliant, not because of the gender of their pupils. And you need to sort of get away from this idea that if your daughter goes to a co-ed school, she's not going to study science or maths. Girls School Association, Girls Day School Trust did some research a few years ago. In girls' schools, 50% of girls read a science subject at A-level. In academically selective co-ed schools, the proportion is 50%. 40% of girls' schools in Girls School Association, Girls Day School Trust go to university to read a science subject. In academically selective co-ed schools, the proportion is over 40%. It's a complete red herring. Schools are brilliant because of teaching and learning, pastoral care, all of the opportunities they provide, and the extent to which they instill a social conscience in their graduates.
Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed that conversation. Do not go away. We're doing house prices. But David and Jesse, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed that episode. Thanks for listening, and please head to schoolsshow.co.uk to check out our other recordings.